Earth and Sky.
Welcome to Clear Voices. I'm Jorge Salazar. Many scientists and experts think that nanotechnology will someday fundamentally change the things that we do and the way that we do them, much like the steam engine or the internet. What's more, nano is making a large economic impact right now, but mainly behind the scenes, shaping how products such as gasoline and computer hard drives are made. I spoke with Mark Ratner, Morrison Professor of Chemistry at Northwestern University in Evanston, Illinois. Ratner is a renowned nanotechnology pioneer and the author of the book, Nanotechnology, A Gentle Introduction to the Next Big Idea. Here's Mark Ratner. Dr. Ratner, welcome to Earth and Sky.
Thank you very much.
Could you maybe tell us a little bit about what you'd like the public to know right now? If you wanted to introduce someone to nanotechnology, what are some of the most important things that you'd want to get across to someone about it?
Well, the book was actually published, about 4 years ago, and I wrote it with my son. And the idea is that nanotechnology, nanoscience is going to change the way that we make things, the way that we do things, and the way that we understand things. It's going to have major effects on everybody's life. And I think if that's going to be true, then we really need to understand a little bit about it. So the book was written to make that point in pretty straightforward language, mostly talking about people and what they do. Since that time, there's been tremendous investment, and we've learned a great deal more about nanoscience and nanotechnology. We've learned a lot of good scientific things, a number of good technological things. We've raised a lot of questions involving things beyond science and technology, issues of economics and equity and safety and things like that. So it's going to be I guess the word they use these days is transformative. It's going to be a transformative technology. It's going to change a lot of things that we do and a lot of the ways that we do them. And so I think it's important for folks to know what's more or less happening here.
Where is nanotechnology making its biggest impacts? You said it's going to transform the way that we do things, and it seems like it's kind of doing it behind the scenes.
You put it nicely, you said behind the scenes. So the two biggest, from an economic point of view, the two biggest processes right now that use nanotechnology, one has to do with the way gasoline is made. It involves something called catalytic cracking, where you basically take the oil, separate it, and then break the big oil molecules down into the smaller molecules that your car actually uses, like octane. And that's now done to a huge extent using little nanoscale, nano means a billionth, so a billionth of a yard, nanoscale size holes in a naturally occurring material called zeolites and some artificial zeolites. And that's a huge industry. It is underlying all the gas that we use in the United States and pretty much around the world. So it's probably a $100 billion a year industry. But of course, people don't know about it because it's within larger companies that make petroleum and gas products. That's one. The other is giant magnetoresistances, which are used in the hard drives of everybody's computer, and that's a purely nanoscale phenomenon. So economically, those are the two biggest ones. But the ones that I think are really going to be transformative have to do with areas like new materials, biointerfaces, medicine, and energy.
What do you mean by biointerfaces? What is that?
What we'd like to be able to do is to measure what's going on in different biological systems. For example, the most obvious is diabetes. Somebody who has diabetes needs to monitor their sugar levels all the time. And the way it's done right now for most diabetics is that you actually need to make a hole in your finger and take blood 4 or 5 times a day. What we'd like to be able to do is to rig up a nanoscale device that would measure the glucose concentration and dose the appropriate amount of insulin at the same time, so that basically diabetics could become self-monitoring in sort of a continuous way. And this would have huge advantages for folks who suffer from diabetes, which is a very large public health problem. So that's one example. And the biointerface would basically be the nanostructure that it might be behind your ear, for example, constantly monitors what the glucose level is and then adds insulin when it's appropriate.
Where are we at right now with this research? Is it something that is being tested now? Is it something still on the drawing board?
Perfect question. We've actually made tremendous progress. There are a whole bunch of small companies out there that are making these devices. A lot of them are undergoing testing. Of course, because we're now talking about, interacting with human bodies, there's a regulatory issue, as there must be a regulatory issue. There are two different kinds of sensing. There's sort of in vivo sensing, where, you actually make a test in the body. And then there's in vitro or sample testing, the kind of thing that you do when you go into the doc and he takes a swab off the back of your throat to find out whether you've got strep or not. The latter is easier because the regulatory problem is much less severe. And so there are a whole bunch of small companies out there one called Nanosphere that's using nanotechnological methods to try to do basically a complete scan of a whole set of markers for diseases.
What, in your opinion, is the biggest misconception right now about nanotechnology?
Well, there are the traditional confusions, which is to say, you know, these are little biological machines that are going to my body and take it over. That's not true. They're not little machines. They don't go into your body and they don't take it over. That was propagated a few years ago, and there's broad belief in that. And then the second is that there are issues of toxicity that we don't understand. There are some issues of toxicity, and we're beginning to understand them. You know, people have been using nanostructures for a very, very long time, going back to the colors that were used in medieval windows and cathedrals. So we've had it for a long time, but what's new since the early 1980s is our ability to manufacture and understand the properties of these nanostructures in kind of a global fashion. So I think the biggest misconception is that these are sort of Frankenstein particles that are going to do terrible things to us. That's simply not the case.
Dr. Ratner, I appreciate you taking this time out today. Thank you very much. I'd like to get your opinion, I guess, about what the future looks like for nanotechnology.
I think I mentioned a couple before. I mean, I think that given the total concern that we have about energy, and we should have this concern, we need to be able to produce and store energy in a way that doesn't harm the environment, in a way that's very efficient. And nanostructures are probably the way to do this. So there's work now on nanobatteries, on nanofuel cells, and some really quite wonderful work on using nanostructures both to store hydrogen and to manufacture solar fuel. This is the kind of direction where nano really helps you, because that's what nature does. I mean, the way that photosynthesis works is really based on a series of very complicated biological nanostructures. We're going to try to do this with synthetic nanostructures because we have better control over them.
That was Mark Ratner, an expert in nanotechnology. I'm Jorge Salazar for Earth and Sky, a clear voice for science.
We're at earthsky.org.